It is time for Brian Ross and Real News. Brian joins us on Thursday morning, and we take a look at some of the stories that are out and about and floating in the media universe. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall.
Well, you know, one thing that has come up in the past couple of weeks, and I think it's pretty interesting, is the way that Joe Biden and the Democratic administration is going to try to implement some of their plans by basically following the same pattern. It looks like the office has agreed that the same process that was used for budget reconciliation can be used for his big package for all the work that needs to be done throughout the country.
That's right. A ruling by someone you probably never heard of, or our listeners never heard of, Elizabeth McDonald. She is the Senate parliamentarian. She's been in that job for 9 years, first woman to hold it, and she sort of rules on the parliamentary moves that the Senate can and cannot take, and everybody accepts that for the most part. She's now saying essentially that COVID relief bill, the $1.9 trillion bill, could be amended to include another $2 trillion for the infrastructure. Now, that's all from Chuck Schumer, and they're working out the final details. But that was a gift to Democrats and to the Biden administration until yesterday, Senator, the other powerful Joe in Washington, Joe Manchin, the Democratic senator West Virginia, said he's not so sure he'd be in favor of that, and he's certainly not in favor of weakening the filibuster. So one step forward, maybe two steps back. Joe Manchin once again showing flexing his muscles as that far the most conservative centrist of the Democrats. And if he doesn't go along with it, the Democrats can't do even the reconciliation.
You know, it's interesting, though. I was reading into his objection, and basically his objection is that he doesn't mind having the taxes on businesses and wealthy people go up to 25%. He doesn't want it to go to 28%. He always has
right.
That. And you know what? As a progressive, I'm sitting here saying to myself, you know what? I believe in what Bernie Sanders said during the campaign. You ask for the whole loaf, and if you get three-quarters of a loaf, you take three-quarters
right.
of a loaf. So I think Democrats have to learn to work within themselves and not eat each other's for lunch. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. And that's the big – and the question is, can they pull off that compromise? And all eyes on the Mr. Manchin and how many bridges he wants in West Virginia.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Republicans have this astounding ability to come together like cement and stick together. Democrats, not so much. So we'll see if the Democrats can flex their power that way. It'll be an interesting couple of days. I tend to think that they will, and we'll see what happens.
Right.
And we'll see. It certainly will take the thing of getting rid of the filibuster off the table for the time being, if it's successful, which is
that seems to be a non-starter in terms of Manchin.
Yeah.
A couple others are not prepared on the filibuster just for reasons of tradition, whatever that is. It's not in the Constitution. Some have suggested, well, how about making it just instead of a 60 majority, making it 55? Lots of sort of ways to flex these rules. Overall, though, I think we have to say that if you look at the first now, 77 days of the Biden administration, they're doing pretty darn well. They've got the vaccination rate way up, with almost a quarter of adults now receiving pretty close to a full vaccinations. And the economy is cooking along. Remember, Trump said that it would all collapse after he left office. That hasn't happened. And even with his son, Hunter Biden, he's getting very good reviews for his book, which is a lot of beautiful things. It includes some very ugly things, too. And he's done a good job, I think, of getting out in front of, his life of addiction and grief and turmoil.
We look at the news coming out of Washington, and you knew this was going to happen sooner or later, and that is a major defendant in the Capitol insurgency has now agreed to flip and give names and all information to prosecutors. That is a big step forward for prosecutors, really, to find out how many people were behind this and what organizations.
Yeah, well, as they sort of continue to focus on the Proud Boys, I've spent some time looking at them. This is quite the group, and they have until January 6th law enforcement had done much about them. You know, they were there. They would often march with support of police. You know, you're free to demonstrate, obviously, in March, but they were planning something, planning an assault on the Capitol, and they pulled it off. And, you know, the Justice Department is using all its tools to go after this group in a big way, and I think there are even more things that are coming we haven't heard about yet. But they clearly are focused on them, and, you know, and I think it's important that they do it. And we shouldn't forget what happened January 6th. Many on Fox News and elsewhere act as if it never happened, and that's just not true.
Another interesting thing that Joe Biden is doing, and God bless him, I don't know whether it'll be successful or not, but he has come up with some executive orders on ghost guns, which is it's important in the fact with ghost guns yet, but it's also important in the fact that it can be a crack finally in the way to get some substantial action going on gun control.
It's the best he can do on executive orders.
Yeah.
There's still a lot more that could be done. It goes with universal background checks, which is, you know, receives wide approval in all public opinion polls. Just can't get it past the Republicans in Congress.
Yeah, and you know, so far, I think Joe Biden's experience, which some people use as a detriment against him, is really coming into a positive because he's finding interesting ways to maneuver around a majority of Republicans that just don't want him to do anything.
Right. Well, he, I think, so far has been very adept at. He knows how to pull the levers of power in Washington, and he's got a very good staff that is in the communications where they keep on message. This is a professional operation, and you don't hear much about what they don't want to hear about. And he's been able to get, for the most part, control of the day-in, day-out news cycles, with the exception of what's happening at the border, which is still a mess and chaos.
And speaking about news cycles, the trial news that which is coming out, I can't watch it because it's just too emotionally straining. But and I've finally been convinced by people that it's a good thing that it's on TV so much. But it really is excruciating and just very. It breaks your heart to watch it.
I know. I've been anchoring some of the coverage on the Law and Crime Network, so I've been watching a lot of it, and it is traumatic for the jury, certainly, and for viewers, for the whole country. To see this person die again and again from 5-6 different angles. I think the one thing that concerns me is any sense that this is a slam dunk case is perhaps setting expectations so high that if the jury returns a verdict that it's perhaps just manslaughter, which is the least of the serious charges against them, there could be outrage and suggestions something wrong in court. You know, Derek Chauvin has a defense. Whether it's successful, I don't know. But in part of it's based on the allegation that George Floyd was a drug user, and perhaps he used too many drugs. That's what killed him. It wasn't the Derek Chauvin knee to the neck. There is a defense, and as you know, they just need one juror of the 12 to buy into that.
Well, and that's the other part that I find, that with so much coverage, that if for some reason this verdict comes down and it doesn't satisfy, it really opens up maybe a summer of rage.
Without a doubt. And, of course, there is the fallback of a federal civil rights prosecution, which has not been taken off the table. In fact, you recall, Chauvin was prepared to plead guilty to the lesser charge, but the Attorney General, the much reviled and denounced William Barr, refused to go along with the deal, required a trial. So he at least stood up in that case. So, yes, we're going to probably get a verdict the next week or two, or going to get to the jury in the next week or two, and it will be closely watched. It is interesting to watch how Derek Chauvin's lawyer, Eric Nelson, does cross-examination. Yesterday you had this whole issue of a garbled message on the tape, which George Floyd either said, "I ate too many drugs," or "I ain't do no drugs," and that's for the jury to decide.
It's an amazing thing to watch. Our justice system, in itself, is like making sausage, but hopefully, in the end, everything turns out all right. And I guess so. You'll be covering this until it's over.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big trial, and it's fascinating to watch. It's rare you get, we haven't had a big trial like this in quite some time, and as you say, it's traumatic to keep watching these videos and imagine what it is like for the George Floyd family, but for the whole country. One juror had a panic attack after some of these videos were played. It's tough. And I do think that it's pretty hard to get past those videos. It really is. Whatever skill that Derek Chauvin's lawyer has, pretty hard to get past the videos.
All right, Brian, we'll check with you next week. Have a great week.
Okay, thanks, Marshall. Good talking with you.
All right. Brian Ross with Real News this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can always find Brian on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.